A podcast from Gory Digital Media. Welcome to the Corey Talks podcast. Here's Corey O'Connor.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 6 of the show. We are now at the halfway mark. And before we get started, I just wanted to mention that the first story on this edition of the show relates to the sexual assault of a staffer at Australian Parliament House in Canberra. It may not be suitable for all listeners. The information I will supply may be triggering for some people, so I'd advise that you fast forward around 8.5 minutes. Last week, it was revealed that a former Liberal Party staffer, Brittany Higgins, was raped while working at Parliament House. Ms. Higgins alleges that a male colleague raped her in the office of then Defence Industry Minister Linda Reynolds after a night out in 2019. Last Tuesday, Higgins released a statement welcoming a long overdue investigation into the culture in Parliament House as announced by Prime Minister Morrison. But she's called for additional reviews into the laws that govern ministerial workplaces. The day this story came out, it was almost universally agreed that Prime Minister Scott Morrison mishandled the situation. I'll play you the audio now of the day after, where Prime Minister Scott Morrison addressed the media and took a question from a Channel 10 political reporter by the name of Tegan George. Let me first just point out that the Jenny that the Prime Minister is referring to is in fact his wife, Jenny Morrison.
Jenny and I spoke last night and she said to me, you have to think about this as a father first. What would you want to happen if it were our girls?
You said this conversation really hit home when you had it with Jenny. Thought about it as a husband and a father. Shouldn't you have thought about it as a human being? What happens if men don't have a wife and children? Do they reach the same compassionate conclusion?
Well, look, in my own experience, being a husband and a father is central to me, my human being. So I just can't follow the question you're putting.
Didn't you think yesterday, as a leader of this country, that it was a crime you had to take?
I did, and said so yesterday. In reflecting on what she said last night, I hadn't seen her account until it had occurred last night. I didn't get to see it because I had events and other things that I was dealing with till late last night. And I had the opportunity at that point to see. I discussed it with Jenny. She had seen it and we discussed it. That's how we deal with these things. I think Australians know that I'm pretty honest about these matters and I seek to deal with them in as humanly a way as possible. And my family helps inform that, as I suspect it does most people.
The Prime Minister has announced new processes to better support women working in politics. Liberal Party Member of Parliament Celia Hammond will work with the party to consider new standards. Addressing the incident for the second time last Tuesday morning, Mr. Morrison said there should not be an environment where a young woman can find herself in such a vulnerable situation. And I would add, for anyone for that matter. Ms. Higgins has said in the days that followed the alleged rape, she was called into a meeting with Senator Reynolds in the very same office where it occurred. The PM has now apologised for that. The way he handled this situation and then bringing his wife into it to say that I was told that I should think about it, this is if this was our daughters, I think it's a complete mess. And the fact that the Prime Minister has employed at taxpayers' expense someone to make him seem, well, for want of a better word, more human. Yes, Australian taxpayers are paying for the Prime Minister to have someone to make him seem more empathetic and sincere. Well, just personally, I don't think that that's working. Former Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says he finds it very, very hard to believe that the Prime Minister's staff did not know about the alleged rape. Now, this is in reference to Prime Minister Scott Morrison saying that he had only found out recently about the rape allegations. An important point to note, former staffer Brittany Higgins says that a member of the Prime Minister's staff checked in on her last year. Now, that claim by Prime Minister Morrison that he was unaware does not seem all that plausible when you consider less than 2 days after the alleged incident, the couch was steam cleaned at Australian Parliament House, where the incident is reported to have happened. In Question Time last Wednesday, Prime Minister Morrison said that Mr. Turnbull was entitled to his opinion. The facts in these matters demonstrate, he said, as they've been reported to him, that Brittany Higgins had made a decision that she did not wish to make a statement and register a complaint with the police, and that Minister Linda Reynolds and others respected that decision. This clearly indicates that Minister Reynolds knew all about it. Under what circumstances would she not pass that information on higher up to either the Prime Minister's office or the Prime Minister himself? Meantime, Federal Labor has backed calls for an independent complaints body to be established for political staffers in the wake of this matter. The Prime Minister announced 2 reviews in response to the allegations, one to be conducted by a Liberal MP and one by his department.
Corey Talks with Corey O'Connor.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison has faced fresh questions and anger at when his office actually learnt about the alleged rape of Brittany Higgins. Amongst claims of "you can trust me," the Prime Minister last week announced the 4th investigation. Morrison says that the head of his department will investigate the matter and check phone records after text messages emerged that purport to show his office was notified in 2019, weeks after the incident occurred. But Morrison remains adamant his office first found out about the allegations 2 weeks ago, acclaimed former Liberal staffer Brittany Higgins rejects.
I set out in the Parliament this week the timetable of when I'm advised my office knew about it, and I can tell you I knew about it on Monday. And frankly, it shattered me. It absolutely shattered me. I mean, of course, the many ramifications of this, but frankly, the one that shattered me the most was just the sheer humanity of what has occurred here, and that was deeply distressing, as you, I'm sure it was for everybody when they were first confronted with this news. I've sought to be as open and honest as I can be about this matter. I've told you everything I know about this matter, and I will continue to. This is devastating. This is awful. And there are many who I know, anyone who has been confronted with this information, I'm sure would agree. But you know, the thing that's most important are the issues that Brittany has raised, and I've been listening to those carefully and seeking to address them in the best possible way I can. So, and I'm just going to continue doing that. We have to deal with issues of culture, which I'm sure you would agree are not confined to the offices of parliamentarians. I mean, this is an issue that every workplace deals with, and we have to make workplaces safe.
Well, this story just keeps on evolving with brand new facets. A second woman has come forward alleging that she was sexually assaulted by the same perpetrator as Brittany Higgins. Former Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard said that she hugely admired Brittany Higgins' courage in coming forward with her account of her rape in Parliament House. And despite a screenshot text message indicating otherwise, the Prime Minister maintains that he has only recently found out about the rape allegation. Australia's medical regulator has approved the Oxford University AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine for use in Australia. This country has secured just under 54 million doses of the vaccine from AstraZeneca. It will be produced in Melbourne and will be the vaccine most Australians get. Now, the vaccine has been approved for everyone over 18, but will be given to people over 65 on a case-by-case basis. The Therapeutic Goods Administration said the advice was for the AstraZeneca jab to be administered in two doses 12 weeks apart. If not possible, a minimum interval of 4 weeks between doses can be used. But a recent study by Oxford University, which is yet to be peer-reviewed, found that the AstraZeneca vaccine not only prevented severe disease, but appeared to cut transmission of the virus by around 67%. As I understand it, the Pfizer vaccine is a little more effective. But unlike the Pfizer vaccine, which must be stored at between minus 60 and minus 90 degrees Celsius, ooh, that's cold, the AstraZeneca vaccine only needs to be stored at 4 degrees Celsius.
Corey Talks with Corey O'Connor. With Corey
O'Connor. Australia's COVID-19 vaccine program started yesterday, according to Health Minister Greg Hunt, and Prime Minister Scott Morrison is expected to be among the first people to receive the jab. Last week, the first batch of the Pfizer doses arrived in the country, and the Therapeutic Goods Administration has approved the AstraZeneca vaccine. All adults can expect to be offered a jab by October. Now, supply will vary to each state based on their proportion of the highest priority group. Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt said the vaccine rollout is slightly ahead of schedule, with 60,000 doses expected to be administered by the end of this month. Now, the government says that there are enough vaccines to vaccinate every Australian and then some. Australia hopes to buy three different vaccines in total: the Pfizer, BioNTech, Oxford AstraZeneca and Novavax, which at the moment, at the time of recording, has yet to be approved anywhere in the world. Yes, the vaccine will be free for all Australians. And what can you expect? I've been wondering much the same myself. You will first be screened to confirm you are healthy and eligible. You'll then be given the first dose of the vaccine, along with information about any potential side effects and when you will need to return for your second dose. Now, it won't be a case of going in, getting the jab and walking out. You will need to be monitored for a short period of time before you leave, and your details will then be entered into the Australian Immunisation Registry. Yes, the vaccine will be voluntary. The government has confirmed that not getting the vaccine will not affect a family's eligibility for the family tax benefit or fee assistance with childcare. The no jab, no play rules only apply to the National Immunisation Program vaccines, and the COVID-19 vaccine will not be included in this. So I wanted to talk a little more about Facebook and the ban here in Australia by the company. Now, I'm the first to admit that I don't know a whole lot about Facebook, how it works. I know it doesn't work for me, so that's why I've avoided it. I thought it was a bit like Twitter. So when Australian media outlets, just say ABC News Online, for instance, would publish a story, there'd be links to it, say on Twitter. There'd be an associated picture, short headline, and a link you can click to read the full story on the ABC News Australia website. But apparently with Facebook, it was like a duplication of their website on Facebook, because that's where the young kids go to get their news. In one way, I've got to say that I understand just solely Facebook, not Google. Facebook might be a little annoyed that they'd be charged for news on their site. They are running a private company, and if they want to start charging people, or rather don't want to be charged for hosting the news stories by news outlets, then I actually understand that. That said, I do not agree with the way that Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook have just come in and seem like they've spent very little time considering it and just banned access to local and international stories on their platform within Australia. But, you know, this makes me think maybe Australians will finally get off their bums and bookmark legitimate news sources to read news if that's what they want. But I don't think Australians can complain. In fact, I think a lot of Australians or people around the world can be blamed for this because too lazy to actually go to the source. We're just like, oh, I go to Facebook so I can communicate with my friends and I expect to get my news, my weather, my sport and my entire life on that one platform. When exactly did things change? We became that lazy that we couldn't be bothered looking around. I'd mentioned on Twitter the other day that I find it bizarre how a lot of people will Google a website instead of taking a guess at what it is and typing it in. I mean, if it's wrong, okay, you've wasted a couple of seconds. But to first open up Google and go to the search, type in the name of the website you're looking for, then hitting enter, and then selecting the website. I could have already been on that website, because most websites are named after the business. They make it easy for you to find. And then, of course, that just brings you back to the fact that why don't you just bookmark your favorite news site or your favorite whatever site instead of just like, oh, I'll use Google every time. That is really lazy, and that just promotes companies like Google to say, hey, we can make some money off this. And they're well within their rights because they are commercial businesses. Now, it's said that of every $100 Australian spent on digital advertising in Australian media these days, $81 Australian goes to Google and Facebook. The company says that it had helped Australian publishers earn around $407 million Australian dollars last year through referrals, while Facebook's gain from news is minimal. And then there is the question that will fake news thrive now that news outlets are banned from publishing and putting links to their stories on Facebook? Well, I don't think so. I think if people actually go to the source, you wouldn't go to Facebook and say, log into my bank account there, would you? I'm sure a lot of people would like that. While I'd be concerned with security, they're concerned with, oh, but it took me, you know, a couple of seconds longer to log into my bank account. So I think if people are encouraged to bookmark actual news sites where they get their news from, the question of whether fake news will thrive, well, it probably still will. People will still post stuff on Facebook that is clearly not true. And Facebook are always really, really slow at removing that sort of information from their platform, much slower than Twitter. But I think that becomes a problem for Facebook that they need to be dealing with. But if people went to legitimate news sites, I don't think that would be an issue. Last Wednesday, Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews announced that the state's five-day snap lockdown, a circuit breaker lockdown, would end that day. But Victorians can only have five visitors to their home, and masks are still required indoors and outdoors where you cannot social distance. 50% of public and private sector can return to work. Schools have reopened, and retail and hospitality density limits return to the same rules as a fortnight ago. The four reasons to leave your home have gone, as has the 5 kilometre travel restrictions. Last Wednesday, the media waited on with bated breath as to what the Premier would say. One of the journalists present was Rachel Baxendale from the Australian newspaper, a News Corporation publication. Now, Rachel is very well known at Premier Andrews' media conferences. Much of Rachel's line of questioning seems to just want to fan the flames of the discontent from a few people in Victoria over COVID-19 lockdown. In fact, many of the questions seem not to relate to what the purpose of the media conference is. And last Wednesday was a new low for Rachel. I would play you the audio of her asking her question to Premier Daniel Andrews, except the background noise is far too distracting. Actually, out of full openness, I will play it. You won't understand it. I'll summarise it afterwards, and then I will play Premier Daniel Andrews' response.
You, in announcing this lockdown, you used a lot of rhetoric about the type of restrictions that you face today. We've seen with the holiday cluster that no one beyond people who were at the holiday and people who were either in their household or able to test positive, and also the Grand Fire Code who went all around the southeastern suburbs. No one's tested positive, but the virus hasn't been transferred to him, from him to anyone else. Do you stand by that, Richard, about the case, right?
In essence, Rachel would appear to have questioned whether the lockdown was worth it, and is the UK strain of COVID-19 worse than COVID-19 itself. Now, this is what the Premier had to say. And I've got to say, the wit coming from Premier Daniel Andrews is quite amazing. You expect that from like a talk show host. But thinking about it, Daniel Andrews has had to put up with a lot of inane questions from News Corporation over the, almost 12 months. So I guess he has become an expert at it. Here is Premier Daniel Andrews of Victoria, his response to Rachel Baxendale's question.
It's not rhetoric, they're facts. If you, Rachel, want to sit here and dispute with me that this is a more infectious strain of the virus, then your argument's not actually with me. Your argument is with the scientific consensus of the world. I'm not interested in having this debate. I said what I said on Friday. I stand by what I said on Friday. This strategy has worked, and it's worked, not if I might say because of these sorts of exchanges. It's worked because a Victorian community have proven equal to this.
In current parlance, I've got to say, ooh, burn.
You're listening to the Corey Talks podcast.
Let me remind you that quarantine during a pandemic is the responsibility in Australia of the federal government. That aside, the Victorian government is examining alternative quarantine options, with Avalon Airport near Geelong flagged as a possible location.
We are actively pursuing and examining the construction of a purpose-built quarantine centre, a centre that would serve to replace in at least significant measure, maybe not entirely, but in significant part, the work of inner city hotels. People will be in the same location, but they would not be sharing the same spaces. So they're not under the same roofline. It would be a cabin style, village style environment where there would be fresh air, where there would be not zero risk, but lower risk. The two obvious candidates, Avalon Airport, you've got space and you've got an international terminal. And of course, Melbourne Airport as well. But I think we do have to have a proper conversation at a national cabinet level about what we can do, what further can we do to reduce the risk, particularly in light of this UK strain and all that we know about that.
Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews there making that announcement. The Chief Health Officer of Victoria, Brett Sutton, says a purpose-built quarantine facility with fresh air would be great for welfare issues. Now, senior government officials will travel to the Northern Territory to see how the Howard Springs facility operates. My view is that this should have been looked at a lot sooner, but it should have been looked at by the federal government, who has, as I mentioned, the responsibility of quarantine during a pandemic. Meantime, Victorian coronavirus restrictions are due to be reviewed this week as no new COVID-19 cases have been recorded. The Victorian Health Minister, Martin Foley, expressed cautious optimism about the situation at last week's press conference. A decision is expected this Friday. Some social media news now, and Facebook has deleted Australian activated nut job, Pete Evans' Instagram account, over repeated coronavirus and vaccine misinformation. The former celebrity chef and now conspiracy theorist Evans has been permanently booted off the picture-sharing platform. In a statement, Facebook said that they do not allow anyone to share misinformation about COVID-19 that could lead to imminent physical harm, or about COVID-19 vaccines that have been debunked by public health experts. Meantime, late last week, Facebook announced that it would stop Australians from sharing or viewing Australian and international news content on its platform. This is all part of a dramatic escalation of the social media giant's standoff with the Australian government. The move, of course, as you'd probably know, is in response to proposed laws that would force tech companies to pay for news content. And the Parler app is back online after a month-long gap. BBC News Online reports that the controversial social media app Parler has come back online after a break. The Twitter-like app was a favourite among supporters of former US President Donald Trump and right-wing conservatives. It was banned from Google and Apple's app stores and Amazon's web hosting service after an armed mob broke into the US Capitol building on the 6th of January. Now Parler says it is back and here to stay. They say they will no longer be working with a big tech provider, but was built on sustainable independent technology now. Anyone who had Parler on their Android phone or iPhone or iPad will be able to log back into their account, but anyone new to Parler might have some difficulties in downloading the app via Google's Play Store and may be likely to find a not currently available message via Apple's App Store.
Corey Talks with Corey O'Connor.
Hey, do you remember those, what do they call it, Tide Pod Challenge? I mean, at the time I thought, what the hell are Tide Pods? I'd never heard of it. I didn't realise what it was and how dangerous the whole practice was. Well, there is something new out there in 2021. It's called a full face hot wax TikTok video. Now, if that sounds dangerous to you, I'd say it is, because the experts are warning people against that. And they are the experts. They are the skin experts. Now, not being on TikTok because, well, quite frankly, I got better things to do. They show softened resin covering the subject's face, mouth, and neck. Sound dangerous to you? And partially penetrating their ears and nose before being removed. Perhaps not unsurprising, a barber has posted some of the most watched examples and says that it is beneficial. Oh, I'm sure. To his business. But the bad asses, well, BAD, that's the British Association of Dermatologists, said attempting to wax inside your nose or ears is not recommended. I think perhaps they should have been a little more definite about that, because sometimes people can't, you know, read between the lines. And a UK-based skin specialist has also raised safety concerns about the risk of obstructed breathing. Now, I'm not going to tell you where to find this barbershop on TikTok, because I don't think that would be a proper thing to do. But I will say that more than 800,000 TikTok users are following this particular user account. One of its first attempts, posted back in November, attracted nearly 84 million views. And still on TikTok, BBC News Online is reporting that the European Consumer Organisation says that TikTok has been breaching users' rights. The claim by the European Consumer Organisation that the platform falls foul of multiple breaches of EU consumer rights. It also claims TikTok has failed to protect children from hidden advertising and inappropriate content. Owned by China's ByteDance, TikTok has faced increasing criticism regarding its privacy and safety policies following a number of incidents.
This is the Corey Talks podcast with Corey O'Connor.
Less than 3 weeks now until the next election in Western Australia, and opposition leader Zach Kirkup has rejected the polls pointing to a Liberal wipeout. A recent news poll of 1,034 voters points to a 12.5% swing to the Labor government headed by Mark McGowan. But McGowan says that a lot can happen in the next few weeks. He does not believe the poll is correct, saying that the result should be taken with a grain of salt. This is always a very contentious issue in the United States. People seem to have, in my opinion, in the US, an unnatural obsession with guns. But President Joe Biden, still sounds great to be able to say that, President Biden, President Joe Biden is calling for tougher US gun laws on the anniversary of the Parkland school shooting. The president joined the Parkland, Florida community in remembering the 17 killed 3 years ago in the shooting at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. President Biden is calling for Congress to outlaw high-capacity magazines. He says gun manufacturers should be held responsible for the role their products play in violence, and I wholeheartedly agree with that. The 46th president of the United States has said that his administration would not wait for the next mass shooting to take action against their epidemic of gun violence.
Corey Talks
with Corey O'Connor.
Queen Elizabeth has stripped Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, of their royal duties. Harry and Meghan had told the Queen that they will not be returning as working members of the royal family. The Queen said in a statement they will turn loose their royal patronages and honorary appointments. In a statement from Buckingham Palace, which is, for my liking, a bit too clinical when you consider that Harry is one of the Queen's grandchildren. Buckingham Palace said that Harry and Meghan will remain much-loved members of the family.
Corey Talks with Corey O'Connor.
If you're keen on doing the right thing for the environment, and hey, we all should be like that, this story will be like having your cake and being able to eat it too. Except replace that cake with Coca-Cola. BBC News is reporting that the Coca-Cola company is trialling its first paper bottle. Now, the prototype is made by a Danish company from an extra-strong paper shell that still contains a thin plastic liner. I guess in the end it's still better for the environment, unless that thin bit of plastic is more harmful than a standard Coca-Cola bottle. But the goal, Coca-Cola says, is to create a 100% recyclable, plastic-free bottle capable of preventing gas escaping from carbonated drinks. And of course, the barrier must also ensure that no fibres flake off into the liquid gold. Now, it's not just Coca-Cola. Apparently, industry giants are backing the plan. Coca-Cola expects to set a goal of producing zero waste by 2030. Anyone who knows me knows that I love cats. I'm a cat man, not a dog man. Well, Gizmodo.com.au is reporting that we should give cats more meat and playtime. Now, this is in a report apparently by a real person and definitely not written by a cat. But in essence, people looking to keep their outdoor cats from killing local wildlife might want to heed the findings of a brand new study recently released. Now, that study suggests that feeding your feline a diet rich in meat and playing with them regularly will help alleviate their appetite for hunting. Okay, that makes sense to me. Animal researchers in the United Kingdom enlisted the aid of 355 cats, and you know how hard it is to gather a consensus from cats. They all have their own opinions. They come from 219 households across England for their experiment. The cats were specifically chosen for their habit of bringing home prey. I used to have a cat who did that. Farmland, not all that far away from me, to bring home a rabbit and look at it like, well, are you going to cook it for me? Now, to begin with, all the cats were observed in their natural setting for 7 weeks before the experiment began. Then, over a period of 5 weeks, they had most of the cats experience various conditions that might affect their outdoor hunting behaviour. It included different diets, toys, and devices marketed specifically to keep cats away from prey, such as collars with bells attached or brightly coloured collars easily seen by birds. Well, it seems in the cats that were given high-quality, protein-rich diets with plenty of meat and few grains, for instance, the number of animals brought home was reduced by a whopping 36%. In the play group, where owners played with their cats using feather wands and mouse-sized toys for 5 to 10 minutes a day, the reduction was 25%. So I guess you could say the cats of the world have spoken, and us mere mortals should listen. And that brings to a close this edition of the show. Thank you so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it. I also appreciate Kenny Davis, who reached out to me via the Corey Talks website this past week to let me know that Kenny has, in fact, subscribed to the Corey Talks podcast. So thank you so much, Kenny. I do appreciate it. So with a little more to say than until we next connect next Monday, take care.
Don't forget to rate and review. It helps others find the show. Keep in touch at CoreyTalks.com. A podcast from Corey Digital Media.